Hi everyone, this is Steve. Welcome to Pacific Life Church Podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to check out our website, pacificlifechurch.org, and subscribe to our email list. The email is actually the best way to keep up with everything going on around here at PLC. Most importantly, I hope the following presentation will inspire you to follow Jesus, love each other, and serve your neighbors. Okay, so today we're going to wrap up our series, I've Got Questions. And if you've been with us the last several weeks, actually this is the seventh message we're going to talk about it today. We've tried to answer some really, really hard questions. And so if you want to go back, you can check out the archives and see some of those messages and look at those questions. And if that's a question you've been asking, go back and check it out. Today we're going to talk about a question that I think I think the human race has this question. It is, how good do I have to be in order to get into heaven? Great question. So interestingly enough, I had a dream about heaven actually last night. And it was like the craziest dream. So I dreamed that I died, because you know, you kind of have to die to go to heaven. And when I got there, St. Peter was there to meet me. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing, St. Peter. And here I am at the gate. And he said, well, hang on, buddy. He said, before you come in, you got to do something. And I said, well, what is that? And I happened to notice that there was this huge ladder. It's like a celestial ladder, and it went way, way, way up in the sky. And I'm like, okay, what do I need to do? And he said, well, he says, there's a chalkboard next to that ladder. And I saw that too. And he put some chalk in my hand. And he said, I want you to climb the ladder. And every time that you can think of a sin that you committed, I want you to like just write it out. And I'm like, well, this could take a while, but okay. And so I started writing some sins down, you know, and something I said, something I did, and I thought of another one. I thought of a real big one, and I wrote that down. And I was making progress. I was going for a while. And then suddenly, I felt somebody stepping on my fingers like, ah! I go, who is that? Look down. It was Pastor Tony. I said, Tony, what are you doing? He said, I'm coming down for more chalk. How good do you have to be to get into heaven? How good do you have to be? There's this guy that I've known. He's actually in his 80s now, and I've known him for a long time. I've actually known him for over 30 years. And when I first got to know him, and even today, he's not a believer, he's not a person of faith, but when I first got to know him, you know, I knew that right off. He just let me know, I'm not there. But he's a fairly nice guy, sort of. One day, his mom passed, and I was offering my condolences to his mom, and I started to move the direction of the conversation towards faith, and he's just kind of like, nope, when you die, you die, that's it, you're dead, it's over. And I'm like, oh, okay. I could tell you have some conviction about that. And so some years went by, and we had another conversation, and I was able to move that conversation towards faith a little bit. And this time he changed it. This time he said, well, Steve, I just believe that if you're good, you know, you're gonna go to heaven. And I noticed that through the years he was getting nicer. And so I'm thinking, this guy thinks what so many other people think, that if I'm just good enough, that's going to get me into heaven. And so here's what I know based on my research, and I read like research all the time on, you know, opinions that people have and surveys that have been taken. And so most Americans believe in an afterlife. In fact, most Americans believe in heaven or some version of heaven. And most people, most Americans in particular, believe that good people go to heaven. Most Americans believe that they are good, And so therefore, they are going to heaven. Most people would say that, well, I'm not perfect, but I think I'm going to heaven because I'm better than my neighbor. They sell drugs. And I'm better than my boss because he's cheating on his wife. I've always noticed that, have you ever noticed that when people compare, maybe you do this, we compare down instead of up. And we think, well, because I'm better than, I think I'm going to be okay. Most people believe most everyone believes God is good. And because we have a good God and we're good people, we're going to be in heaven with a bunch of good people. And I finally think that really at the end of the day, not a lot of people actually think about heaven or eternity. As a matter of fact, I think probably for most people, the only time they really think about it is when they're forced to because they're at a memorial service or a funeral. It's like, oh, here we go again. I got to think about that. But you know what? The Bible tells us in the book of Ecclesiastes that God put eternity in our hearts. You see, in our hearts. And what we do is sometimes we just stuff it down because, like, well, we're busy and I don't want to think about that, and we just sort of move on. And so let me start with the big question is, what is good and who defines good? Because if you have to be good enough to get into heaven, actually, what is good? And if it's like, what is the ticket? You know, the ticket, it's good. Well, what does that look like? I better know what that is. So, you know, I've heard people say, everybody knows what good is. Come on, universally, everybody knows what good is. It's just kind of intuitive. We know what good is and we know what bad is. And I absolutely disagree with that. Let me give you I can give you a lot of reasons, but one of them is this. So when the pandemic hit, and that was a tough stretch for everybody, I saw so many people that said they were good, and this is outside the church and inside the church, and those people are bad because they're doing stuff that I don't agree with. And I saw some of the worst behavior I've ever seen in this country, and even in the church, people were like reaching across the aisle, okay, you're bad because you did that. And then the other people are going, no, actually, we're not bad. Actually, you're bad. And there was all of this, and that word, you know, I'm good, or I'm good because I don't whatever, or I'm good because I do whatever, was being thrown around. In 1958, a philosopher, her name was Elizabeth Anscombe, wrote an essay in which she stated that we shouldn't use the word ought. And I thought it was interesting that she said that, because she's an atheist. And she said we shouldn't use it because the word ought suggests that there's a universal kind of morality that we have. There's this universal ethic that we all have, and so we say, well, you ought not to do that, or you ought to do that, right? And even though she's an atheist, I totally agree with her. By whose definition shouldn't you or should you do that thing? When we talk about good, there is no indisputable, agreed upon, divinely revealed standard. So the idea of good, right, morality, it's all over the map. As a matter of fact, good is a moving target. Your definition of good, my definition of good might be really different. Case in point, before the 16th century, slavery was everywhere. And slavery was not considered bad. As a matter of fact, for a lot of people, slavery was actually considered good. Like if you own some slaves, people were like, that's a great thing. God is really blessing you because you own some slaves. Now, who thinks that's a good idea today? How about the treatment of women? You know, a woman couldn't vote in this country until 1919. A law was passed by Congress, ratified in 1920, that you could vote. Now, today, we look back on that, we're like, what? That wasn't good? That women couldn't even vote? You know, so somehow that all changed. Does anybody think that that's good, that women couldn't vote? No. When I was in Papua New Guinea, this about several years ago, there was about almost 500,000 people of this Inga tribe that we were working with. We support a Bible translator over there, Adam and Martha Boyd and their family, and they're doing an amazing job. By the way, they just completed the New Testament. How exciting is that in the Inga language? Man, you can clap for that. That's monumental. That's amazing. But anyway, when I was over there, you discover things about different cultures and different people. I discovered that the men pretty routinely beat their wives. And they think it's okay. Like, yeah, that's just what we do. That's our culture. Again, I asked, does anybody think that that's good? I don't think so. So let's just, for a moment, let's talk about what's happened in our American culture in the last 25 years. So 25 years ago, I was doing things, probably more like saying things, and acting in ways that you would shame me today, 25 years ago. I'm so glad that they didn't have smartphones 25 years ago, because I'm sure I would be canceled. But, just think about that. So if you're old enough to remember back 25 years and you think, what was I doing 25 years ago? What kind of jokes was I telling, What were some of my behavioral patterns and things? And so if you think about that and you can identify that, you're like, oh my goodness, things have changed. What was good 25 years ago, today we're going, no, that's not good anymore. That's bad. Do you see where I'm going with this? Good is a moving target. And so here's another one. Does God, if you get into heaven, does he grade on the curve? Okay, is like maybe 75% good enough? Lord, I'm here. How'd you do? Let's see. Oh, 75%. Okay, come on in. Or maybe, I think a lot of people think, well, it's not 75%. If I could just tip the scale, so it'd actually be 51%. And so if I did 51% good in my life and 49% bad, I tip the scales in the right direction. I'm like, yes, I made it. So how good do you need to be to get into heaven? And whose standard of good are we talking about? Well, you might say, well, Steve, I grew up in the church, and I believe that the Bible is the standard. And yeah, actually is. And by the definition of the Bible, we're all in bad shape. Nobody is going to make the cut by the standard that the Bible has for good. So what is God's standard or definition of good? So that's where we really need to go. If you have your Bibles with you, I'd like you to turn to Matthew chapter 19. And there's a really, really fascinating story here about a guy, and this is a guy who's rich and powerful, and he's young. It's one thing to be rich and old, but you're old. This dude is rich and young, so he probably feels like he's got, the world by the tail. And it says this, someone came up to Jesus with the question, teacher, what good deeds must I do to get into eternal life? Did you catch what he said there? What good deeds, things must I do to get into heaven? So he's of the mindset of so many people today, well, if I just am good, and so Jesus says, why ask me about what is good? Jesus replied, there is only one who is good. So Jesus sort of sets the standard or identifies what good is right there. He says, there's only one good. And do you know who he's referring to? Himself. It's kind of like almost like a wink. He goes, okay, here you go. But to answer your question, if you want to receive eternal life, keep the commandments. And of course, in that time, everybody would have said that's what it's all about. They were still in the time of the law. Which ones, the man asked. And Jesus replied, now, as I read these commandments that Jesus gave to this young man, I want you to notice that they are all relational commandments. He said, you must not murder. You must not commit adultery. You must not steal. You must not testify falsely. Honor your father and your mother. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then he says, I've obeyed all these commandments, the young man replied. What else must I do? Jesus told him, and this is where Jesus, I think Luke reports on the same account, and Jesus said he loved this young man, but he's trying to help this young man. Like, how can I help this guy? He says, if you want to be perfect, go and sell all your possessions and give the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and then come follow me. And when he tells this guy this, what he's really doing is he's putting his finger on the problem that this guy has, because this guy thinks he's a really good person and he's really not. Because he has all this riches and possessions, but does he really care about people? That's why he talked about all these relational commands. So he said, basically, in essence, sell your possessions. I'm going to free you up from the very thing that's holding you back. Sadly, verse 22, but when the young man heard this, he went away sad, for he had many possessions. What about the Ten Commandments? I often talk to people, and somehow the subject, they know I'm a person of faith, and it's like, well, keep the big ten. Oh, do you really? Okay. On a couple of occasions, I said, can you name the big ten? No, they can't. And then some of us, well, you know, the gold rule, you know, do unto others as you have them do it to you, you know, and, okay, do you actually do that? See, when Jesus taught his most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount, he did something which absolutely made religious people furious. You know what he did? He set the bar even higher. Now, that's interesting because religious people of his particular time, they thought that the way to please God was to keep all the commandments and to keep all the rules. And Moses established a lot of those. If you read the Old Testament, you know, the law, Leviticus, there's a whole bunch of rules. And so you know what the religious people did? They thought, if God likes rules, we're going to make even more rules. And so what they did is they added 613 more rules. It's called the tradition of the elders. And they're thinking, this is the way that you please God. The problem is that those rules made everybody more miserable than ever, especially the people that were trying to keep them. And then you had really the Pharisees, the religious elite at the time, and they were the rule enforcers, and they should have been the nicest people of all, and they were the biggest jerks of anyone because they were just trying to make everybody keep these rules, and everybody was miserable. So here's what Jesus does. He comes along, and he doesn't address their man-made rules. As a matter of fact, you could read where he rebukes them for all these extra rules at another place in the Bible. And so what he does is he expands on some rules that they already know. So for instance, he says this, and all of his hearers know exactly what he's talking about. He says, you've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. And I can imagine there's probably a lot of men there and women, and they're all like, yeah, that's nothing new. It's been around for a long time. Moses said that. You shall not commit adultery. Yeah, we get that. We're good, you know. Where are you going with this? And then Jesus says, but I say unto you that if you even look at a woman with lustful eyes, you've committed adultery with her in your heart. And I can almost imagine a bunch of them going, oh, you've got to be kidding. No way. That's unreasonable. I mean, you know, I'm going to do my best not to commit adultery, but don't tell me that I can't even look and think. And what is Jesus doing? He's going to the heart of the issue. He's trying to help them understand these commands are not just arbitrary rules. You know, it's not just checking boxes off. There's a reason behind these, and he's getting at that. And then Jesus said, here's another one he threw out. He says, you've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemies. And in their culture, you know, they completely understood that. It was a revenge culture, and they're like, absolutely. In the Old Testament, it was eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You know, you get me, I'm going to get you. And then Jesus comes along, and he sets the bar so high that nobody could ever keep it. He says, hate your enemies, but I say, love your enemies. And they're like, what? What? Did we hear you right? What do you mean, love your enemies? And do you realize even today that Christianity is the only world religion, major world religion, that says that? We're the only one. It makes us unique. It doesn't make us perfect, for that's for sure, because a lot of times Christians haven't been able to do that. There have been wars in the past where, you know, they actually persecuted their enemies. We're not supposed to do that. Jesus, man, he sets the bar way, way up there. He says, no, what I want you to do is I want you to actually love your enemies, pray for your enemies. So what is Jesus doing? He's drilling down on the commands. And he says, I want to talk to you about the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law. That's what you're all caught up in. And one of the things that we see in this thing is that God is relational. And this is where a lot of people miss it, even today, but especially back then. They didn't get that part. Look, God, when he looks down on all of you and all his children in this world today, he says, I love you. I love you. So don't hurt each other. I can relate to this as a dad of four children, and I have six grandchildren, and I love them. I love them with all my heart. And I'll tell you what, if you hurt my children or my grandchildren, we are not going to be good with each other. We are not going to be good. You say, Steve, can I borrow something from you? No! I've got some tickets to go see a Padre game. Keep them. They're losing right now anyway. But we're not going to be good with each other. I think one of the problems is that we fail to see how often we hurt people. I mean, but we're quick to remember how often people hurt us, aren't we? I mean, can you say in all seriousness, as we're talking about commandments and relational sins, that you've never hurt your parents? You've never hurt your children? You've never hurt one of your friends? You've never hurt your younger sister or brother or your older brother? You've never hurt your boss? Maybe you talk behind his back. You've never gossiped, you never slandered, you never lied about somebody. Can we, any of us, say that? Not even close. So again, do you see what I'm doing here? I'm showing you that God has set the bar so high, it's like asking us to jump to the moon. Like, oh, we can't do that. And then we say, but I'm good enough to get into heaven. See, the Bible doesn't present us with a standard of conduct that guarantees heaven. Did you know that? It doesn't guarantee heaven. The Apostle Paul would say, all the law was ever supposed to show you is that you were not good enough to get there. So, if that's the case, how do we get there? Like, how do we get into heaven? You know, in the Old Testament, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, especially if you read through the Old Testament, there is not a well-defined theology of afterlife in the Old Testament. And you read it, and you can catch this. Even if you're reading through the Psalms and you're reading through it, you're like, yeah, they had a sense of it. They believed in an afterlife, but there was this place called Sheol. And Sheol was a place where, you know, if you were a person of faith, it would be good. And if you weren't a person of faith, it would be bad. But other than that, it's very, very ambiguous. There's just not a lot there. So in the New Testament comes along, and they talk all about heaven. The New Testament is filled with heaven and what heaven is going to be like, and probably nobody talks about heaven more than Jesus. And the way that Jesus talks about heaven, we're like, you want to be there. You want to go there. It's going to be the most amazing, excellent, coolest experience anybody could ever have. But here's what you need to know first. Okay, are you ready for this? This is a zinger. It's going to get you. Good people don't go to heaven. For every person you know, maybe you think that, maybe you're watching online right now, you're like, whoa, wait. What do you mean good people don't go to heaven? So we've talked about good. We've tried to define good. Good people don't go to heaven. Wow. But I'm going to heaven. Why? Because I'm not good. I'm forgiven. I've done a lot of things in my life I'm not proud of. I've sinned a lot in my life. Don't look at me like that. You have too. We all have. It's forgiven people that go to heaven. It's people that have bowed the knee and said, I realize I'm a sinner, and I realize I could never be good enough, and I realize I need you, God. And that's the only way I'll ever get there. Did you know that heaven's going to be filled with bad people? Like, Moses is going to be there. Moses murdered somebody. David's going to be there. He was an adulterer. Bad people that were forgiven. And bad people that bowed the knee. That's what you're going to find in heaven. In Romans 3:10, it says, no one is righteous, not even one. Not even one. In Romans 3:23, it says, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory or the standard of God. You know, if there ever was a person who could have kept the law perfectly, it was this guy named Paul, the Apostle Paul. You would know him as. And one time, Paul was doing a little bit of bragging. Not really. He was trying to show us something. And so in the book of Philippians, he says, you know, when it comes to the keeping the law, he goes, I was better than anybody. And he said, I was perfection when it came to keeping the law. He goes, I was a Pharisee of Pharisees, and he talks about all the things that he did. And then he says a little bit later on, not in this passage, another one, he goes, however, I was also the chief of all sinners. You'll find that in 2 Timothy. How could that be? Because Paul realized the law couldn't do it. He was the one who said the reason God gave us the law was to show us we could never, ever attain to it. And we'd be so beside ourselves, we'd go, God, the only one who can save me is you. And God would say, exactly. So you humbled yourself and you bowed your knee. And you said, Jesus, I can't do this without you. That's the only way that we're going to get into heaven. So how do we get into heaven? Well, here's the good news. It's not based on being good. That should, right now, having said that, that should make some of you feel real good. It's not based on this standard that's so high that we're not going to make the cut, that you're going to get there and you go, I just missed the cut. It's not based on that. And here's the good news. Jesus paid the tab for our sin. It was big. It was huge. Could never pay it. And so he comes down and he pays the tab. In fact, in Romans chapter 10, verse 9, it says, if you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God had raised him from the dead, you will be saved. He paid the tab. So I'm going to give you a definition of good. Are you ready for it? We've been talking about good. What is good? Jesus. Jesus is good. And if you're as good as Jesus, well, then you're good. But nobody is as good as Jesus. He is the standard. He's the definition of what good is. In 2 Corinthians 5:21, it says, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, that in him we might become the righteousness of God. So he paid the tab. Jesus comes along and he says, you could never pay this tab. Not in a million lifetimes you couldn't pay the tab. I'm paying it for you. And so the only one who never sinned is the one who paid the tab for all of us who have sinned. See, a lot of people get caught up in religion. And religion is all about, it's working your way to heaven. Religion is about doing. It's like a treadmill you can never get off of. And I meet people and they're trying so hard and like they feel guilty. It's like, oh, I'm just trying so hard. And here's the other thing I hear people say all the time. And they say, I hope I get in. That sounds like a lot of insecurity to me. You don't have to hope. All you have to do is bow the knee to Jesus and say, I'm hopeless. That's why I need you. I can't meet that standard. And by the way, Jesus, thank you for picking up the tab. You know, thank you for paying for all of my sins. The difference between religion and salvation is do and done. It's already done. All we have to do is just trust in Jesus and believe in him.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast. If you'd like prayer to connect with us, please go to our website at pacificlifechurch.org, and we would love to connect with you.